It's 8:11, and in the studio with us now, Charlie Sturgis with the Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So trail's pretty nice, and with some more rain coming, that's going to help things.
Yeah, you know, even though it's going to shut us down a little bit, yeah, but if you live here and have recreated here long enough, you know this is the yo-yo season. You know, we go between nice conditions and muddy conditions, and certainly we always love to ask people just to control their enthusiasm during the muddy time. So, but the good news is everything is so dry, everything's drying out really fast. So even this additional rain, if you want to moan and groan, it is taking the man-made snow off the runs faster. So, you know, anytime we get rain, we're going to get that snowpack to disintegrate. So all in all, things should start opening up higher and higher, you know, with that with those man-made snow runs off out of there, melted. So, Rick, give me a quick report. You know, things are good up on Johns and Sweeney's, and, you know, really you'd have to go really high, probably start getting wet. So try to avoid, you know, probably the mid-mountain stuff. It just is not going to happen yet, just face it. But it's going to be sooner than I've ever seen it, I think. And our crew is starting to come on this next week, and Rick says, you know, we're going to be out definitely taking trees out. So let us know if you see some stuff down. We love to get emails or a text or whatever. Just send it in to us. Try to give us a location and whether or not we really need to maybe show up with a chainsaw. Those are the really helpful issues for us, because if we can ride in with a handsaw and get a few things out of the way, that's great. So get out there and have fun. I'm planning on riding today before hopefully the storm comes in. You know, get do that right away.
Okay, and it's Mountain Madness Month.
Yeah, you know, it's last year was our first year of really actually doing a membership drive in the 21 years of being a nonprofit organization here. We do find it to be extremely helpful to be out there engaging the public more on a face-to-face basis. And so we will be doing some coffee pop-ups and whatnot. And the big deal is on May 21st, we'll be out at the canyons again doing a open house with all the other trail organizations. And then also have a movie, Chris Waddell's One Revolution, which is a killer cool movie. And it's a great way to start off your bike season to just see that kind of tenacity to get up to the top of a peak on a hand-pedaled bike. That's pretty wild. So, and so we'll be also at things like, and of course want people to be aware of these events. Both swaps are coming up here May 9th, and you can drop bikes off at for the Young Riders Swap, you drop bikes at White Pine and Jan's, and for the Kohl's Swap, it's just the following week, the 17th, you drop them off at Kohl's a day or two beforehand. So check in for details with those shops. They know what's going on probably more than I do at the moment. So anyhow, should be fun.
Yeah. Also, why don't you, this is the final day to get comments in with regard to the first phase of Mountain Accord. Is Mountain Trails got a dog in the fight?
You know, I don't know that we have so much a dog in the fight. We've been participating in the discussions over the last year. You know, I guess this is a great time maybe to take a moment and just talk about Mountain Accord. Mountain Accord is not what you hear a lot about out there. It's not about just transportation. It's about transportation, yes. That's one of the big problems facing the Wasatch Front and facing even the Park City side. But it's also about environment. It's about economy. It's about recreation. It's about how to preserve all the qualities of these different components. So, you know, even though any process can have its kind of pitfalls, which certainly it's worth being somewhat paranoid about, which I think what the county's trying to do in kind of guaranteeing some of the outcomes is important. I think one of my big takeaways when talking about the Mountain Accord is you're really looking at a group of stakeholders. You know, 250 people have been involved in this process over a course of over a year that have actively and proactively come together to try to quantify the problems of the future, you know, 2030, 40, 50, and at the same time qualify the solutions. And in qualifying the solutions, just because those ideas are thrown on the table doesn't mean they're the ideas that are going to work, they're not going to pass NEPA, they're not going to be fundable. There's a lot of things that can go on between now and then. So it's really, I think, really, really important to get online, do the survey, and play a part in this. I mean, we, on the backside of the Wasatch, are making a really big effort at making sure our neighbors on the front side of the Wasatch have a good, healthy future existence, because it can affect us. And that's why I would encourage the City Council and Summit County Council to stay in the game. So Mountain Trails, on the other hand, we have been there at the trails table. We were able to push forward a subcommittee and a list of projects that we felt were important. There were 30-some trails, actually, between the Wasatch and front and back. And we pinpointed or highlighted for the executive committee five main trails. One of them looks like it is probably going to be a good go-ahead here, is the UOP project. Which is about 7 more miles of trails, and that'll be a collective effort on the part of UOP, Mountain Accord funding, actually Centerville Basin and Mountain Trails. So a project we really feel like is going to be a good one, and that's going to be the result of Mountain Accord process at this point, and albeit a smaller section, but the trails recreational side. So kind of cool with that.
So where do things stand with the WOW Trail? They're going to be
You know, it's at the top of our list. We think, you know, some of the little undotted I's and uncrossed T's should go away. Hopefully, I'd like to have said that it had gone away already, but we're still working on it. And with the sale of the Mayflower land, we hope there's, once that closes and people kind of know, get it all sorted out with the new owners, hopefully the original grand plan can be implemented. It is on the top of our list, but we have a long list this year. We're actually going to be putting out almost an extra $30,000 or $40,000 in trail work this summer, and we're going to be extending our season as long as we can. So we're going to start early right now. This will be the earliest start we've had, and we're going to go as far as we can weather-wise.
New trail, is that what you're saying? What, you're going to spend the 30?
Yeah, we're going to be looking at, hopefully, WOW, finishing the Stone Ridge project. That should come up pretty quick, and maybe that'll probably be a National Trails Day project. We're looking at a hikeable and well-signed version of a more preferred hiking trail on Quarry Mountain, utilizing the loop up there, so not unlike the PC Hill project. And also there's an opportunity to extend the Mid-Mountain from Silver Lake over to Deer Crest area. And that's about a 2-mile extension. And crazy as it may seem, Rick and I actually flagged that alignment in February with no snow on the ground at 8,000 feet. That was a little scary. We didn't run into snow until we were in the Dark Pines. Beautiful extension. Makes a lot of sense. And the Bald Mountain homeowners, Bald Eagle Homeowners Association, is the one allowing that to go through. So we're certainly going to take advantage of that opportunity if we can.
Okay. Hey, Charlie, thanks.
You betcha. Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:18. KPCW News Time now, 8:22. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, if you've been on Sweet Alley recently, you've seen the construction project going on behind the post office, below the KPCW studios, and in front of City Hall. In the studio with details, Economic Development Director Jonathan Weidenhammer, along with Project Manager Dave Gustafson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
So what are we calling this plaza? Do we have a name for it yet?
City Hall Plaza.
City Hall Plaza.
Sounds catchy to me.
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't want to change it to like the KPCW Plaza or anything?
Everything has a price, I think. I don't know.
The liquor store plaza?
Sure.
And it's going to be exactly what? I mean, looking at it, I mean, I've been watching the construction going on. I still can't figure out what's going on there.
Well, there's a couple of big goals. Probably the primary one is we have all these visitors coming from out of town, and the first thing they see is the back of all these buildings, and they kind of meander diagonally through Sweet Alley to get to Main Street. So one of the primary tenets is to get people from these parking garages and put them in a place, give them a nice sidewalk, give them a meaningful place to walk through, build a little park so kids can play in, but have there be a place so that when you come out of the parking garage, you're in a place before you get to Main Street. And the second goal is really to reinforce the civic presence of City Hall. And, you know, I guess that's kind of my ego or our ego showing through a little bit, but we're proud that we have a strong presence in the community. And, you know, we got 60 or 70 warm bodies up there, and linking them to Main Street's important to us. And we think we're a nice, strong presence in the community, and we want to reinforce that. So what the project is it's a series of sidewalk improvements. It's connecting the stairs coming down from City Hall over to Main Street. We're going to redo the whole intersection at 5th Street and Sweet Alley so that there's crosswalks and sidewalks and places to walk. And it highlights and emphasizes the pedestrian above the car back there. You know, people fly up Sweet Alley at 7 in the morning at 30 and 40 miles an hour. We want it to be safe. There's going to be some lighting. And then there's going to be a little plaza, a park. You know, it can be closed down for small events or a function or a fundraiser. And then in the meantime, to balance the business goals, is we're introducing a series of short-term parking spots so that people can come and go to the liquor store or come and go to the radio station or, you know, do some short-term business. I think we're short on that in the business district, and we're excited to introduce that.
All right. So is it going to be concrete, grass, asphalt?
Combination of all of those elements. We'll have, you know, concrete sidewalk leading here in front of KPCW all the way down to 5th Street. If you remember, you know, we used to have cars that were headed in parking off of Sweet Alley, and people would walk behind those parked cars to get to 5th Street and was not very safe. So now with this extension of the sidewalk all the way down to 5th, it's going to really make nice connectivity to Main Street.
So those spaces that were right there in front of the or behind the post office are going to be gone then, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there'll be parallel parking. You know, so we'll have some parallel parking off of Sweet Alley now too. You know, we'll be eliminating about 4 parking spaces total with this project.
All right. So what are these forms here, concrete
those are
walls?
Seat walls right down there. And then the 2 big square ones, I know you radio listeners can't see what I'm describing, but there's a couple of big footings that will mark the entrance to the walkway up to the Marsac stairs. So that's what you've got going there. And then the 2, we've got seat walls all
seat
around.
Seat walls? What is that?
Just a concrete seat wall, just like over at the bear bench. You know, so if you're walking through the bear bench and you need to take a break, it's just a nice bench.
So it's a place where a family can come in, the parents can sit down while the kids explore the historic wall. Behind it, there'll be a combination of new bricks and paving along with some grass and landscaping. And then the footings that Dave's talking about, there'll be these, we're calling them vertical monuments or elements. They're going to have architecture similar to the Art Deco, the historic City Hall, in that when you're walking and you're drifting through 5th Street or you're coming down the stairs, you're going to know those elements should take you to the crosswalk at 5th Street's. So you kind of know how to get across the street. And the seat walls or the concrete benches will help you navigate your way through there. So again, you're not walking diagonally across surface parking. We want to try to create an intuitive, safe walking experience.
Yeah. As you were doing the excavation, I noticed the familiar sand-colored tailings, right?
Yes.
So you had to deal with those?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not going down that deep. We're keeping the same grade that's pretty much existing out here. Just happen to go a little bit deeper where we're pouring concrete for the rat slab, which is the concrete that's underneath the pavers. Where we've got the footings, we're digging down a little deeper, and we're hauling all of that dirt to Clean Harbor out in Tooele, Grassy Mountain.
And it looks like they just left.
They just left, yeah.
Yeah, so 2 truckloads there.
We did 3, this morning. So it's we pretty much demolished the pile that was on site from the footings.
Yeah, what does that add to the project? Any idea?
A couple bucks, say the least.
Yeah, yeah. What are we paying for the entire project?
I think it was about $680,000.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as a plaza itself, it's going to hold how many people?
Oh, you could, 500 easy. And it'll be the thing that'll be nice. We've got power out here, shore power, so we wouldn't have to bring generators in. So we've got a house panel at the bottom of your stairs that we'd be able to tap into, and we also have power at the other end in the historic wall parking lot that was installed when we had the Sundance Source, that round building that was there a couple Sundances ago. So we've got it'll be a great location for somebody to put on a back alley bash of some sort, or I don't know.
And so whether it's the Silly Market, the way they use behind the post office area,
right,
or whether we use just the small area where this new plaza is, or we expand the area to the north end of the city, the historic wall lot, you can expand the area to accommodate a bigger, a smaller event.
Yep. Yeah.
So the concrete's coming back then to lay the sidewalks. We haven't started to see that yet.
No, you haven't seen that yet.
Okay.
Like I said, we had to get those footings done first for the 2 vertical elements. And we'll probably be seeing sidewalk possibly, as soon as next week.
Okay.
At latter part of next week.
You expect to have it wrapped up when?
Got in for 4th of July.
Yeah. And the rock wall back here, the historic rock wall, are you going to have to redo that? I mean, at one point they came back and said it wasn't historic enough?
I've asked Dave to redo one small part of it. And so behind the historic kiln of the old mill that was back there, we reintroduced similar blonde sandstone behind it, so it would appear to be one project. Back to the Department of the Interior guidelines on historic renovation, you want to make a clear distinguishment between old construction and new construction, so we're simply going to pull out a couple $100 of sandstone wall behind it and replace it with some I-beams and wood so everybody can look at the old construction and say, oh, I get it, that's old, and that little sandstone behind it, that's different and that's new. We get it. It's, you know, probably not $1,000 of work.
So you can use the pavers somewhere else?
Yeah, Dave's,
yeah, yeah, we'll, Dave's going to introduce them. We'll put them on a couple pallets, shrink wrap them, and use them for someplace else.
All right. Let's go up the street then, Brew Pub. What's happening there?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we checked in with City Council and made sure we were working in the right direction for our next big one. And the next big one and the biggest priority for the Historic Park City Alliance, the Main Street folks, is that Brew Pub Plaza. You know, so at a high level, we're talking about replacing in kind the parking, the surface parking that's there with a structured parking element, about, I think it's 48 spaces. And then on top of it, at Main Street level would be a park or a plaza. And we have every intention of building a dynamic event space. And so to me, it seems pretty simple to build a parking garage. It seems very complex to figure out what a dynamic event space means to me or to you or to Main Street or to the community. So we're going to try to bifurcate the project so that we can build the parking next spring, get it done for winter, park in the parking garage for the winter, park on the top of it in the winter. And then spring of 17, we would go vertical with kind of this plaza or park. And again, you know, it's going to have infrastructure for events. Can't really tell you more than that. I think it's going to be a very iterative conversation with the rest of our stakeholders to figure out what we want to do there. But we're really excited.
Yeah. So did you decide to go one or two levels of parking?
We haven't decided that yet. So we released a request for design proposals this week, and they're going to do feasibility options for one or two levels of parking, and then a series of concepts. They're required to do three concepts for what the vertical plaza would look like. Once we get that concept work, and then we're going to check in with everybody and see where they want to go. It'll have some preliminary cost estimates. So, you know, we're working towards building that parking next spring.
All right. And then, Dave, you've got a month to wrap up the library project. Are you going to do it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's looking great. We're ready to start doing the site work. So right now, the furniture is moving in. So all the bookshelves, they're being assembled as we speak. You know, so we're looking really good for June 13th.
Yeah, that's the grand opening. But when do the guys got to be out of there so that the library can start moving
out? Oh, yeah. I mean, we're starting to move library stuff in. The official movers, we'll call them, the guys that moved all the stuff out, they're starting May 11th. So
they're pretty much done inside.
Oh, yeah. Inside,
stairs are in. And,
yeah, hmm. Yeah. Things are really happening over there. So, like I say, hopefully we'll be moving out on the site work, you know, just starting next week.
Unless we put out a press release, I think, yesterday, or it's coming out this morning, on the details of the move. The library will shut down in its permanent location for, I think, about 4 weeks. We are going to keep some of the programs going, including kids' programs and story times. And I believe we're going to have a computer lab available at the MARC through the interim month. So if you could help us get those details out, I'm sure we can get you exactly what they are.
Okay. I haven't seen that yet, but
okay.
We'll bring...
Cool.
Adrian,
yeah, thanks. Thanks, you guys, Jonathan Weidenhammer and Dave Gustafson.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:33 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Park City High School physics and engineering and PC CAPS teacher Charlie Matthews, one of five Utah educators, selected for this year's KUED and Salt Lake Tribune Teacher Innovation Awards. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Charlie, and congratulations.
Well, thanks, and good morning.
So how are you nominated for this award?
Names were submitted, and then representatives from KUED, the education TV channel, came and made observations, and then from that they selected and liked what they saw.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you get a look at the nomination itself? I mean, what did somebody have to say about why you were a good candidate for this?
Talking about what I do primarily with the PC CAPS program and how, as I run it like an engineering firm, and how it's a very different model for teaching and learning than the traditional classroom.
Yeah, so you feel it's a lot different than what you do in your physics classroom?
It's a world of difference, and some of the things I talk about are failure. And in the classroom, and in a traditional class, and I just had to bolt on up here 10 minutes ago leaving my AP physics class, where there's right answers and wrong answers lead to low scores on AP exams. But in the real world of engineering, failure is not only acceptable, it's a necessary part of the innovation process and design process. And actually, failure many times is to be encouraged. And that is so counterintuitive, particularly to students that have been in the classroom where, and I'm a supporter of classroom teaching, but it's important for these students to begin to learn that if you're going to innovate, if you're going to design, that going through the process and having things that don't work and then analyzing what caused it to not work is actually a valuable part of the design process.
So they have to have some kind of fundamental physics understanding, though, and that's got to be done in a classroom setting?
Yes. Mm. And what I've said with the CAPS program and what I said in this nomination process with this award is that I will always be first and foremost a physics teacher, and that you have to learn the fundamental rules that in the concepts involved in engineering design. And there are right and wrong ways. There are, you know, if you drop a rock, it's going to fall. Okay, there's no possible other outcome. And the idea then is to take those fundamental concepts, but to realize that in the world of problem solving, where there's all kinds of variables, there may be a host of different solutions. So I see what I do with the engineering program as an extension to take the fundamental concepts and now apply them in these situations where it's not going to be a simple right or wrong answer. There may be a host of possibilities.
So besides the recognition, any kind of cash prize or anything?
I get a little bit.
Oh, good.
I'll be able to buy a few cups of coffee.
So as a former Education Association president, you certainly have been skeptical of new programs. Basically, new programs that can take money away from needed dollars for teachers. You don't feel that way about CAPS, though, huh?
Well, first of all, and it came out in the newspaper article about the award that I was a naysayer, and that was a primary reason. It's not a cheap program to run. It has definite dollar signs attached with it. I see it as a program that, particularly as it grows, it's cost per student is actually going to come down because there'll be more students involved per facilitator in the program. It's another program, and all new programs cost money. I happen to be a believer that we have a community, a school district that values education. I do believe in first and foremost pay your teachers. I will always believe, I'll go to my grave believing if you want to innovate in education, you pay people and you get the best and you bring them in. And that fundamentally is how education works at its best. But with that, bringing in new program innovation helps and allows the students to be exposed to as much variety as possible.
Well, and as we've reported, the CAPS program moving back to the high school there in the media center, are you okay with that? I mean, probably part of the allure of the program is that you were off campus and really could do your own thing without that administrative oversight.
Well, I could lead in with some tongue-in-cheek to that question, but the only sadness with me is that it's a reflection, because where we're going to be moving is the library. And I happen to share a house with a librarian. So I get to hear a little bit about, the absence of books on a shelf, what that can mean. With that said, though, it's a fantastic facility. I think it's only going to improve the PC CAPS program. I like having the administrative oversight there. It's going to actually encourage higher performance. We will still be able to treat it as a separate engineering firm, business organization. We're going to have a back door. So for clients and mentors, they will come in as if it was a separate office building.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, having it there, it may expose more kids to it, no?
I definitely believe that. It's a big picture window, and kids out in the hallway are going to see it, as opposed to being in a separate building where unless a kid really, a student really seeks it out, they never even know what it is, what it's about. And this is going to be an opportunity for students to just wander in and check it out, see what's going on. And I hope it encourage more students to junior and senior year in high school want to be a part of this program.
So with the resignation of Jennifer Jackenthal, Vice Principal Lindsay Anderson taking on the oversight side of the program, does that mean that you're going to need to take on more without that full-time director?
No. I mean, it's a pretty encompassing job. Excuse me. Pretty encompassing job that isn't going to change. The things I do working with the students, but also getting out and working with the clients, the mentors, that aspect of the job isn't going to change. What's really going to change is my job description. Partially, I'm part of my job is going to be moving into a STEM coordinator position for the school district. And with the four-year plan of developing a more articulated goal-oriented STEM program that begins with the youngest of students, kindergarten, all the way through the senior high. And having been the AP physics teacher for all these years and the PC CAPS instructor, I can see the capstone, the end of the road. And now what I hope to do is to provide students at younger years with the tools so that as they move up towards these more advanced programs, they'll have the tools to be successful with it.
So what are you going to have to give up? You can't do it all. Are you going to stop
I'm going to
teaching?
Be teaching less AP physics. I'm going to be only teaching that top-level calculus base next year and slowly moving more and more into this coordinator position. So it's, I guess, that point in my career.
Okay. Hey, again, congratulations, Charlie. Well-deserved.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Good morning. Well, the Park City Sports and Wellness Coalition is putting on another educational evening tonight in the studio to tell us more. From the coalition, I have Finn Gunderson, along with tonight's presenter, Dan Gould. He's the director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Morning.
So, Finn, let's begin with you. You can just give us the details of when and where and...
Right. We have two sessions tonight, one at 5 o'clock, and that's for all the sports in the Summit County, and that's for the head coach or program director. We'd like one or two of them to show up at 5 at the high school, and we'll have a kind of a special session with Dan. And then at 6:30, we have it open to the public, and that's for parents. We're urging parents, and we're urging coaches of these big sports to come and listen to Dan and talk about and hear about the latest research on youth development and best practices.
Okay. So what's your background, Dan?
I direct the Institute for the Study of Youth Sport at Michigan State University, and we have our mission to study the benefits of detriments of sports for children and youth, and then do things that maximize the benefits. And my particular academic training is in sports psychology, where I study children in sport all the way up to Olympic teams.
So when you talk about youth, what are we talking about? Grades, four to 18? Or?
Well, it used to be like 8 to 18, and now most people would define it 4 to 25. They'd even include your college kids, young adulthood in there.
All right. So specifically, what are you going to be talking about for the public portion?
Yeah, I think we'll talk about athlete talent development, which is the idea that we know from research is kids go through stages of athlete development, like fun and fundamentals, and then they, when they're really young, they just want to play and have a good time and learn basic motor skills. And then a little later, they learn how to compete. And then a little later, they train to win. But the idea that we see around the country that really worries us is in the early ages, anywhere from 4 to 10, you're seeing like a professionalized elite model where winning counts and all these other things and a lot of training coming in at too early an age. So we're trying to educate people that there's a progression to follow.
So if we got kids out on the soccer field doing somersaults, let them.
Yeah, exactly.
They're having fun, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, I mean, what's your recommendations, though? I mean, is it best to expose kids to a bunch of different sports and then just find out what their passion is?
Yes. I think the research is pretty clear. For a number of reasons, you want a sports sample when kids are young. Try a number of sports to see, one, which ones they like, which ones maybe their body type fits, which ones psychologically are best for them. From an athlete performance enhancement side, if the child's interested long-term, if they develop an interest and want to be an athlete, they learn multiple sports skills. So if I played soccer and later I become a basketball player, I have probably better footwork than if I just played basketball. Plus, it prevents injuries. By playing multiple sports, you're not overusing that one body part over and over. There's a couple exceptions that they call early specialization sports, and that would be figure skating and gymnastics, where the kids peak at the Olympics, a 15-year-old is an athlete versus a wrestler at 29. But even in those, while they might focus on one sport earlier, parents want to be concerned about how much training and time off and things of that nature.
Yeah. It's difficult, though. I mean, once you start getting competitive, and I know just the raising a ski racer, that, I mean, that's really the only sport that she could do because it's a, it starts in the fall with dry land, so that eliminates the fall sports, and then winter and spring taken up with, the competition.
Yeah, and I think there's two things acting there. There's some myth that one is the more the better at an earlier and earlier age. And then we wonder later when they're 20 that they're tired and they might be burnt out or they might be hurt. So it's not that they don't need to train hard and put a lot of hours in. It's sort of when in the sequence over time you do that. And the others, I think you're almost forced in it today. You're 9 years old and you're on a soccer team and they say, well, next year you got to go on the travel team or there's just maybe a there may not even be a rec team, a local team. So we've lost a lot of our local teams. And what's ironic, we're in an obesity crisis and a lack of physical activity, and most kids aren't going to be on the U.S. ski team. Some are going to be talented. We don't want to lose that child. But most of the kids, we want to learn how to ski or learn how to, whatever the sport is, and enjoy it for their life. And if we don't take care of those kids, and especially a kid that's overweight, maybe physically inactive, from a health perspective, we're all going to be paying like mega bucks to take care of people.
Yeah. So, again, you'll do a presentation and then basically open it up to the Q&A?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think parents have a lot of questions. And, I always jokingly say your kids don't come with instruction books. And then you're kind of thrown into this youth sport world, and there's some really good coaches and really good programs, but there's also a lot of misinformation out there.
Yeah, so when you speak specifically like with the program directors and coaches and stuff, what's your message to them?
Kind of realizing what's best for kids ultimately and recognizing being realistic. There's also a business. Youth sports is a big business, and people make money giving ski lessons or having a gym. Or basketball travel, or if you hold a soccer tournament in Salt Lake for 8,000 kids, the hotels and the, just in Park City, it's an industry. And how do we balance recognizing it's an industry, but what comes first is the child and their development. I like to think of sport for kids as developmental sport. We're trying to develop the child physically, psychologically, emotionally, and competition's part of it, but at the right time.
All right. So the Sport and Wellness, again, Coalition, you guys are like on a mission to get the word out.
We are. And as you know, we put on several presentations over the last couple of years, all with the goal of educating both the parents and the coaches. And a classic example is, let's say you're on the Park City ski team. But in the middle of the winter, what would be wrong if on a Tuesday night you went in and played soccer? And so you establish a joint relationship, say, with soccer or gymnastics. And with skiing, and so you give up a little bit of your time in skiing, but you gain a lot more because you're a multi-sport athlete, less injuries, better balance, everything else that goes along with it. So we're trying to get the clubs and the big sports to kind of coordinate a little bit more, not fight over the athletes, but actually share the athletes and figure out what are the best practices for that youth.
Okay. Again, 5 o'clock for the head coaches and program directors at the Park City High School Lecture Hall. The public's welcome to come in at 6:30 and wrap
it's free.
And it's free.
And
great.
It's free.
All right, Finn great. And Dan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 8:51 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, after a 17-year run at Park City Municipal, Transit Manager Kent Cashel's last day is today. He joins me now in the studio with a look back and what's next. Good morning to you, Kent.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you had hoped to retire a year ago and held off to get something done or just a smoother transition for Diane as she came on as city manager? Or?
Yes, the last year was really about ensuring the city had a smooth transition on the transportation front. And we've been really, really busy laying a good, solid foundation for the new transportation planning division that the city has formed. So I'm feeling real good about Alfred Knotts, who's coming on board. He's got a wealth of experience working in a mountain resort community at Lake Tahoe. And so the time's right, and today's my last day.
Yeah. Well, so what now for you? I mean, you're too young to just, like, retire.
Well, thanks for the young comment. I've worked so hard over the last 35 years since I started my career, and my family's paid a real steep price for the time I've spent in the office. And so for the short term, my focus, and, well, for the long term as well, is really going to be on family. I want to take the time that I have to be a better father, a better son, and a better husband. So a lot of family things going on, and I'm going to have some fun, too, for myself. I love to outdoor adventure, so I'm leaving tomorrow to head down to southern Utah and spend some time in the canyons there. And I don't think I'll have any difficult finding things to do.
Yeah. Okay. So have you always, as you worked for the city, has it always been in transit or?
I actually have had kind of a wild and crazy path through this city, but my background has been primarily, professional background has primarily been in transportation, but I also have a strong financial background. And so I started with the city and as a grants manager, and then ended up managing the budget. And then really I was so involved in federal funding during the Olympics that when Hope Bleeker, who was a transit director at that time, left, I thought, hey, I'd like to get back into transportation. And so moved over to Public Works and took on transit, ended up being the deputy Public Works director, and then we reorganized as a self-managed team where I took transit, fleet, and parking. And then was doing so much of was really the solely responsible for the city's transportation planning as well. And Diane and I came to the conclusion that trying to handle that as one of four major duties was just not appropriate, and that it was time for us to really focus on transportation planning full time. And that's when I moved over to MARSAC last year and took that position over.
Yeah, so during the tenure with transportation, I mean, let's talk about some of the biggest challenges. I mean, is it empty buses or not enough buses or?
Well, you know, my saying is that there's not one, you know, the one thing we need to stop doing is thinking there's one thing that's going to solve our transportation problem. It's going to take a whole portfolio of approaches, and that's really what we're working on now. I think there clearly is traffic and congestion are a direct result of each of our personal behaviors, travel behaviors. And the city can play a role in making sure that we manage the highway capacity we have in the best way possible, and where necessary, adding to that capacity. Although the philosophy, and it seems the voice of the community throughout my career, has been don't widen the roads. And so each of us need to take a look at our travel behavior. I think that's the key challenge. You know, really, we don't, when I look at it, I don't see that we have an insurmountable problem. I'm real optimistic about the future. We do have problems during a short period of the day, late in the afternoon, and it's intense. I'm not trying to diminish it, but I think, you know, if each of us plays our role, that we can get there without paving the, you know, this place that we all are lucky enough to call home.
Yeah. So in terms of some of the your accomplishments, I mean, pulling off the Olympics was a big one, huh?
Yeah, it's fun for me to think back to that. That probably, you know, I spend most of my free time in adventure sport, but that was an adrenaline rush. that whole both the planning and the implementation of that. But we were able to successfully pull off the transportation piece of the Olympics there, and really that it also provided us. The opportunity to learn how to secure federal money and federal assistance, participation, state participation, and so you know over the last since the Olympics, what we've been able to do, we grew our bus system from 12 buses to 37. We now haul you know right at or over 2 million people a year. We have a fare-free system that offer you know operates 365 days a year. Generally 21 hours a day. And, you know, that's provide. And then we were also able to expand the public works facility. So we now have the ability to expand the bus to 60 buses, and which provides a solid platform for transit to play a critical role as we move forward. And, you know, we built a transit center. And so it's been thrilling, and a lot. I've been blessed with a strong city team working with them, and we've gotten a lot done.
Yeah. So, I mean, any recommendations going forward? I mean, besides you know encouraging people to kind of change their behavior. I mean,
yeah, I think it's critical that we each look at how we're contributing to this peak hour issue that we face. It's also critical that people. Realize that city council, the county council, UDOT, the federal government now understands that we have traffic issues back here. And you can see with how we've reorganized at the city, and now the county is going to bring on a full-time transportation planner. What we need now is we need people to give us a little space to do proper planning so that we can implement solutions that are actually going to affect the problem rather than reactionary approaches that are going to expend energy and resources in probably not the most efficient way. So, I would ask everybody, including myself, because I've lived here 30 years and we're going to Diana and I are going to continue to live here, is to give the planners a little space. They don't need a lot of time to get things properly planned, and then we'll go right into implementation. So
yeah. So what about like smaller buses? Does that make sense with shorter routes?
Well, those are a tool, and in some places they make sense, and in other places they probably don't make sense. And so, you know, you always have to look at these things. It's no different than a toolbox. There's the right tool for the job, and I think we do have some application for that as we move forward. And we actually have 7 small buses already that are currently operating throughout. So it's not a new concept. But I know we've had some discussions about how we move people to the main corridors, 224 and 248, and small buses could play a key role there. So,
okay. Well, hey, good job. And
thank you.
Congratulations. And boy, have fun.
I'm looking forward to it. I would like to take a minute to thank City Council and the community for all the trust they've placed in me, and I hope I've lived up to that. And you know, I hope I'm leaving this place in a little better transportation shape than when I found it 17 years ago.
Okay, Ken Cashel, thank you. KPCW News Time now, 9:00.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.